Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another Yuletide edition of Forever Bristol City podcast. I'm delighted this morning to be joined by Dave Fevs, Mark and Ian and myself. We're doing it live on YouTube if you're watching, and if you're listening on Spotify, Merry Christmas. Hope you've had a good one. And obviously, we'll be back again later this week on Saturday morning recording Birmingham City away, our review of that game. But more importantly, at Vicarage Road yesterday, the final score was Watford 1. Bristol City 4, City's biggest win on the road since that 4-0 thrashing of Fulham back in September 2016. First time in 3 years that they've won three on the bounce. So come to each of you as we normally do. Quick thoughts. You first, Dave. Must be feeling pretty chipper. It's Christmas and City have come up with the best Christmas present any of us could have hoped for, really. Three wins on the bounce.
Yeah, I think I remember posting on yesterday at halftime saying I thought that was our most kind of controlled first half performance that I'd seen away from home in a good while. And second half, I think if I wanted to be critical, is that we didn't actually put six or seven past them. I thought it was as good an away performance that I've seen since I've managed to find a way of watching away games, because I don't go to many. I thought it was really good.
Excellent. Your thoughts, Mark?
I think we finally saw what all the work Liam Manning's been doing. The fruits of our labour came off yesterday. It was his ability to win the ball back quickly and create numerous chances, especially down the left with Mometi, Knight, Conway. It was just beautiful to see. And we won all the key moments. So there was a slight hiccup in the second half when we conceded the when it went 2-1, and then we scored again. But yeah, the only bad point for me was the fact that we didn't win it more easily because we just created so many chances. And what stood out for me yesterday was Joe Williams came in. People thought that might be a bold move, playing him instead of James. Liam Manning said it was because he wanted fresh legs, and boy, did he grab that chance with both hands. He was outstanding. Gold saving tackles. The pass for Vyman's goal was, yeah, as Dave said, it probably was a backspin chip rather than a topspin lob. Yeah. But it was fantastic. So well done, Joe. What a win. First one for 7 years. A lot of other milestones as well that we can come on to.
Absolutely. Well, good that you know more milestones than that, because I don't use a few at the start of the programme. Ian, your thoughts? You did a Twitter post which pretty much summed it up, half a dozen bullet points on there, but perhaps you'd like to repeat those or add to it your initial thoughts at 5 o'clock.
We had this three wins on the spin for the first time in 3 years. I think we dominated the game for about 80 minutes. I thought we retained the ball well, even though we had a lot less possession than them and they had more passes forward than us. We were clinical. We had 5 shots on target and 4 goals. That's 80%. You're not going to better that very often. The possession was actually 59-41 to them, but we did so much more with it. Every time we attacked, we actually looked purposeful and dangerous in the final third. I thought it was the best performance over 90 minutes in years. Didn't get any yellow cards. We only committed 4 fouls in 90 minutes. And by the way, the referee, Busby, I thought was excellent yesterday.
He refereed the Middlesbrough game as well, didn't he?
Yeah, because he lets people play, but didn't let anything silly go. And in fairness, I thought it was a fairly easy game to referee. End-to-end stuff. We're 15 points clear of relegation. 1 point off the playoffs, plus a bit of goal difference. And it seemed to be more of what he wanted. And I was really glad that Liam Manning said what I said after the our last win against Hull and then this one, and we can still do better. So hopefully it'll be not too up because we've done that, not too down, but confident going to play Wayne Rooney's Birmingham, who I watched for 90 minutes last night, and they ain't that great, but they have got, we need to be very careful from set pieces because they've got some lumps, and they're reasonable going forward. But as a friend of mine who's got a lot of contacts up in Birmingham said their fans are all saying, yeah, we're okay going forward, but we can't defend. So on to the next one, and hopefully everyone's fit and we can freshen it up and make some changes, because we don't want to overplay Joe and get him injured.
No, true. Dave, I think it was Mark alluded to the fact that the key change was Williams coming in for James. I said after Hull, you know, I mean, James is one of the stalwarts of the team, one would argue, one of the most experienced, but you get more mobility. Do you think that's why Liam brought Joe Williams into the starting lineup? Because that midfield of Williams, Knight in a very advanced role, and Taylor Gardner-Hickman, even the Watford fans I was interacting with afterwards, you know, they said we look very mobile, very quick, one of the biggest sides down there. But that's a big, big step, leaving your captain out and handing the armband to Jason Knight as well.
Yeah, I think pre-game, one of the guys from Bristol World had kind of put his suggested team out. And I thought the likely change was probably Williams for James, funny enough. And mainly off the back of two things. One, just a bit of rest and rotation over a busy period. But I actually think that Matty James had a poor game on Friday night. And I think what we have seen with Manning is he's not going to just, you know, it's not about ditching players for bad games or whatever. It's just making sure other people get opportunities. I was quite a strong believer in Nigel Pearson's selection policy. But I think at times, and maybe sometimes down to kind of injuries and things like that, he was a little bit, or he made it a little bit difficult to leave players out. And I think what we see with Manning is there's definitely a little bit more emphasis on rotation, albeit not kind of wholesale changes. And I do wonder in Matty James's defence where he might have been one of the people who had a sick bug back in the week, because I've never seen him half a yard off, you know, away from getting balls or closing people down like he was on Friday night. So I think it might have just been a culmination of lots of factors and busy period and rotating players. So I think it, you know, it was a very sensible decision. And I, you know, I've always said I think Joe Williams is a decent player. I think with all players, you need a bit of confidence. You need a bit of a, you know, a few games to get yourself up to speed. Of course, he was out injured for a little bit as well this season. So yeah, no, I thought he was excellent yesterday.
Yeah. Mark, you said about Williams coming in, all action, player out of contract in the summer. You know, and look at the rest of the shape of the side. I mean, Tommy, you know, maybe a chance to give him a rest. I thought he was okay yesterday, early doors. He was a little bit off it. You know, I've written down here that, you know, he's a couple of unforced errors, taking the wrong decisions. But the team is picking itself at the moment, Mark, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and that's great for a manager when he's comfortable in knowledge that he can pick the same 11 based on their ability, because they deserve the shirt. So that only changed with Williams. I mean, Tommy yesterday was great. I mean, we're actually seeing the forward players nibbling away at defenders and forcing them into mistakes with their pressing. The collective pressing is just so good, but it did take a lot of time. I mean, you know, these things aren't done overnight, and the work that's gone into it, you can see how that, you know, how they make it hard for teams to play out. But the bonus is when you actually score goals from it. That's what you need to do. It's no good just winning the ball back unless you stick it in the opponent's net, and that's what we're starting to do now. Those two games we had against Sunderland and Hull, there was no degree of comfort at all. There was a lot more yesterday because we were just so efficient. Yeah. It was brilliant to watch, you know. Yeah. But it's taken us 7 years. It's been 7 years in the making, you know, four scoring four goals away. So
incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's that we can't just say, you know, it's turned our season around, because you only need a couple of defeats and you're back looking. You're looking over your shoulder again, but it's great, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. As I say, you know, I feared the worst. I missed their goal. I was still having a cup of tea and a piece of Christmas cake at half time.
I think our defence were as well, Dave.
I missed their goal, but I was looking at the league table and there's 3 points separating nine clubs. So winning yesterday was the difference between being where we are and right down in 14th. So let's get into the action. Ian, it was a bright start. A little bit end-to-end, unforced errors by City, but we seem to be using Mometi more, and he's a player that clearly Liam Manning has a lot of confidence in him, even if he's still a little bit erratic with some of his decision making. But it was a decent start, wasn't it?
And I think with Anis, when Liam Manning came in, I said, if he can get a tune out of Mometi, we've got a player, and I'll start believing that he is a really good coach as advertised. And I think the two things that stand out with a lot of our players for me are, one is confidence and the other is belief. They actually go somewhere and think, hang on, we can win. And I haven't seen a lot of that recently. I think a lot of the time is, well, sit, you know, if we come out of here with a point, it'll be all right. And we're a little bit, oh, not us. No, I didn't see that yesterday. I saw a team that believed that they could win, and they could not only compete but win and do well. And a bit like I think Dave said, we could have got 6 or 7. And I think one change you might see for Birmingham, and it's not about ability or anything like that, would be Naki come in for Tommy on the basis of fresh legs. I wouldn't be surprised to see Matty James come back for Joe, because Joe's got a hell of a problem playing 3 games a week, and we don't want another injury, certainly not another hamstring, which is what he tends to get. Anis is one of those players. They call wingers mercurial, don't they? But they are. And one minute you want to strangle them, and the next minute you want to throw your arms around them and cuddle them because they've done something brilliant. And I like seeing people do things at football that I couldn't do. And he's in that
quite
category.
A low bar.
Sorry,
I said that's quite a low bar.
No, I often see things at football. I think, Christ, that bloke's being paid God knows how much a week. When I was playing, I could do that, but I can't do some of the things that he does. And so, and his first touch is better. He's combining brilliantly with Campering, and Campering is the more attacking of our fullbacks. And George Tanner is being George Tanner. And he's a Liam, well, you know, would anybody, I couldn't imagine anybody previously coming out and saying what a great one-on-one defender he was.
Wow.
Which is the first thing that Liam Manning said. He's as good as a one-on-one defender as anybody in the division. And that team we beat yesterday have been scoring goals for fun. They just won 3 on the trot. And that's
away.
That's not a team that, you know, is I mean, we didn't just go out and beat Rotherham. Due respect to Rotherham.
Yeah.
That's a good side we beat there yesterday, and a good manager and all the rest of it. So yeah, I was very pleased with Anis. Well, I don't think anybody came out with it. It was one of those games you looked at. I don't think anybody came out of that club.
No, there was not a single
came out of that game with anything less than a 7 out of 10.
No, I think you're right. Dave, that battle on the right-hand side, I made note of it, and the one-on-one, Tanner up against Semmer, because, you know, they're a bit flaky at the back, Watford, obviously, as we showed, but they got some very good attacking players, you know, and we all think, well, when McCrory gets fit, you know, thanks, George, and go back to being in the match day 20.
Well, Dave, can you... No, hang on.
I'm talking about... All right, not you.
You're talking about
I'm talking about me, but okay. Yeah. All right, why do we have belief by a fair proportion of the fans, excluding Ian?
I'm not having that.
Why do we have belief is that when McCrory comes back, he was bought to fit that right-back berth, but Tanner plays more performances like that. He's got to make that shirt his own, isn't he, Dave?
I think with everything, you know, I'm not going to change my mantra. As a squad game. I don't do best 11s, and whoever's the right person for the shirt will get it at the time. I think McCrory offers us a different way of playing at right back. He's a bit of a bomber. I think if I've been on before and said this, he kind of strangely reminds me a little bit of Marvin Elliott. He's a bit of a runner. He might be a bit ungainly. That's probably a little bit harsh on him. He's probably a little bit more aesthetically pleasing than Marv is, but he'll get about. you'll get in people's faces, and you know, and that'll give us a slightly different option if he plays him at right back, which I think is probably where he'll likely come in. But that's not to say he won't go and play somewhere else. Who knows what players will be in form and fit at the point that Ross McCrory comes back in. I guess that's the main reason why I never get too sucked into best 11s. I think, yeah, George Tanner yesterday, you talked about Ken Semmer on the left wing. I thought they had a little spell, didn't they, after probably between about 10 and 20 minutes yesterday, where Semmer got on the ball, pinged in some crosses, and they had a few set pieces that he whipped in as well. And that was their probably only real spell in the whole game, which is, you know, pretty disappointing from their point of view. Great for Mars. And I also think second half as well, they made a change at halftime and brought on Martins on the left-hand side. And if anything, he just played out there and stopped them getting any ball to Semmer as well. So I think that kind of didn't work for them as well. And he basically, well, you know, I was probably enjoying the game too much, really, to kind of be in too much of an analytical mode watching it. I kind of switched off at that point, but I don't remember really him doing much more. I was more enjoying how City were playing, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. Mark, Dave said they enjoyed a little spell. I've got one. I mean, Max, I've got two saves, one I refer to now and then one late on. But it was that Livermore volley that he got in the way of that one, I think. But
It was actually Asprilla.
Was it Asprilla?
They got it wrong. I watched the Football League show on ITV2, where we were a league game, which was nice as well. Highlight show last night. So no, it was Asprilla, hit it across his body. Dicky just headed it. He headed it out of the area, but straight to Asprilla. It was a tough chance. But yeah, I think it hit Max in the chest. Don't think he knew too much.
That's right. Made instinct to say. But he's six. I know he conceded one yesterday, but that's six clean sheets, number five in the division at 24. You know, again, some people say, oh, Max, oh. But, you know, and not Ian, obviously.
I thought it was Halloween for a minute.
Yeah. Do you do a good Leonard Rossiter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Miss
Jones.
Oh, Miss Jones.
He did everything right. He did everything
Max
right.
Max O'Leary.
Yeah.
Sorry, younger viewers.
All right. Yeah, yeah, you have to be over 45 to remember Leonard Rossiter in Rising Damp. Although Don Warrington, who does the coffee adverts, he's in that thing, Paradise.
Yeah, Death in Paradise.
Anyway,
yeah.
Back to Max.
Anyway, carry on.
Max is undisputably number one and one of the top keepers in the division. Mark, or am I being too generous in my praise there?
I don't know. I don't know. I never thought of it like that. I haven't really looked at the stats. I'm just enjoying that he's becoming more of a dominant keeper. He's more confident in the air. That's the mark of a keeper. I think in seasons past, he's struggled a little bit in the air. Can't forget the Millwall game last season. I think when the ball was just knocked over the top of him, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And they tapped it in. Some of his kick-ins a little bit loose. I think he can improve a little bit of his distribution. Yeah. But he's a great shot stopper, a good shot stopper. Yeah. But I mean, it's keepers. What a good keeper is somebody who the defence can rely on to, you know, to keep the ball out. There's, you know, if they're beaten, if they're the last line of defence, they've got somebody who's reliable behind them. Yeah. And I think that they feel confident in his ability. And as a five, they're working really well together. That's great. Good four we got at the moment, plus Max. So, yeah, keep it up.
Keep it up, yeah. Anyway, let's get into the first goal. Talk to each of you about it. You first, Ian, just before that goal. Mometi, he loves cutting in and he's starting to get his shooting boots on. I mean, you know, as Ian said earlier, you know, 15 shots, 5 on target. I mean, how many times in the last 3 years do we ever get into double figures with shots, never mind the ones on target? But Ian, take us through the first goal. You know, it was well constructed, you know, but you describe it as you saw it.
The thing that struck me about it is when the ball came in the box, I think, was it a free kick or a corner? I think it was a free kick.
No, it was a free kick from Taylor. Yeah, it was half.
Free kicks come in the box, and their defender got up brilliantly to head it down to Cam Pring's feet. And Cam was in an awful lot of space. And as he said last night, talk about self-effacing, he said, well, yeah, it was me swinger, and I swung at it. Got it, side-footed it. I mean, the main thing is he kept it down. It went through a few players, and into the corner of the net. I just think the keeper just couldn't have seen it. And it is difficult. I mean, the one you mentioned earlier on from Max when the ball seemed to hit him, that must have come through half a dozen players. And it wasn't like it was a toe poke or something. I mean, it was a wallet. So did well to keep it out. But when he's headed it down, I mean, Cam's controlled the ball and shot. And with his ability, particularly, I mean, more with his left foot than his right, it's true. And his ability in the air, he should score more goals. So yeah, I was really pleased with that. And he's starting to get back to, Cam's starting to get back to his best.
Yeah, he takes time to warm up in the season, Ian, doesn't he? Yeah, because a bit like that last season, he's a better second half of the season player, maybe.
Yeah, well, possibly. I don't know, but I mean, that goal yesterday, once again, you get back to this C word again, innit? Don't worry, I'm not going to do it. Confidence.
Yeah.
That's the thing. If you've got players playing with that much and they believe they can win, I wouldn't say you're halfway there, but you're certainly 20% there.
Yeah. Dave, the goal for you, it was Taylor Gardner-Hickman, you know, another good performance from him. He's all action. He's certainly good with his dead balls, because how many times have we seen free kicks not clear the first man or go way over our player? But it was good. And Cam hit it. He belted it in, didn't he?
I don't know if he belted it. I thought he was a bit on the stretch, wasn't he? He probably didn't quite get it in the right...
He was falling backwards slightly, wasn't he, as he hit it?
Yeah. Yeah, it did actually get deflected. Not much, but probably enough to take it past Haimru. You know, as we know from his time here, it's probably not the...
Chris Packett hands, he was called by somebody.
He certainly was, yeah. I think, you know, just going back before, or what earned us the free kick, was another time where we pinched the ball in their third, and they fouled us, put the free kick in. You know, I guess you'd be critical of the defender for winning the header and heading it down rather than heading it up, which is...
I thought it was Zach. I mean, Ian said it was a defender, but Zach was challenging him, wasn't he?
No, yes. It went over Zach's head, and the defender behind him headed it straight down to Pring. So,
right.
It's a good downward header, Dave, wasn't it?
Sorry?
It was a good downward header. You'd be chuffed to bits if you did that.
He got over it pretty well, but I'm still ruined the fact that I think Pring got his first assist of the season on Friday night. And I kind of see these things going in spells, and I should have had a little bet on Cam Pring to get a goal yesterday. And I did think about it, and I thought, don't be so stupid, Dave. So I didn't.
Mark, you just raising your hand to comment on what somebody said, or to comment about the goal, or both, even.
Yeah, I'll just fit back Cam Pring. I mean, it's only his second goal for City. The first one was up at Rotherham last season when we resumed after, I think it was when we resumed after the Championship, resumed after the World Cup. And he got a great header from a recycled corner, I think, from Alex, and a great Alex Scott cross. The funny thing is with that ball, with that free kick, it's in the right area, but we're not really getting anything from free kicks or corners. We don't dominate in the air. But Ismail, God, I would have given that bloke a clip round the ear. It's an awful defensive header. You should head the ball out sideways and get the ball out of the area as far as possible. But to head the ball down. I mean, one of the funny statistics yesterday, you know, I can't remember which Watford defender got the assist, but there was only one assist in the game because of the nature of the goals, and that was the final one. All the others didn't have a City assist.
We're one of the top teams for goals from set pieces, Mark. Believe it or not,
we are.
Are we?
We are.
Yeah.
Oh,
there you go.
I just thought we've been. Oh God. I just thought recently.
Something you should do, Mark, is go and listen to Luke Williams' press conference from a couple of weeks ago, where he talks about why they always take short corners. But he also says around, you know, you don't have to score from the first ball on a set piece. So actually, sometimes you might get one, a bit like you said earlier with the Alex Scott to Cam Pring one. You take a short corner, couple of passes, and then it gets whipped in. That still counts as a set piece goal. That's, you know, it's all part of it. But yeah, we're pretty good from that point of view.
Yeah,
and yeah. I think put it down to the guitar. My head's bunged up at the moment.
Once again, considering we're not the biggest side in the world.
Yeah. Okay.
Dickie makes a difference.
I said Tommy was a little bit wasteful. We had this dominance. We weren't sort of really testing the keeper. I've got here, we had a corner that Williams' shot was blocked, so at least we're getting the shots away. Tommy, poor touch, I think, on the edge of the box, and a really good move. Knight and Sykes combining, Taylor Gardner Hickman with a cross. And there was Mometi again getting a shot in. You know, it was blocked. It probably should have gone in, but at least he was the Johnny on the spot. But then we got the second goal that our first half performance deserved and which we needed. Ian, take us through that, because Tommy was involved with that. That was his only major contribution in the game, wasn't it? Yeah, take us through that.
But the ball got played down the line. What Tommy does do well is run out into the channels, and he's gone out into the channel on the left-hand side. And this is the galling thing sometimes. Tommy can shoot with both feet. We've seen him do it. But he gets wide sometimes on the left, and not to the same extent as Mometi, but he wants to come back on his right foot. But this time he didn't. He smashed the ball across low. Sykes is coming in at the far post. If the defender misses it, he probably scores. But if you're in that situation, we've got players in the box, smash it across hard and low. You never know what's going to happen. And yesterday, that Hoy, who's came top of the passing accuracy stats yesterday, turns it into his own net. Good finish, actually, off the outside of his foot. putting the bottom corner, keeper had no chance. So, yeah, I mean, that's not always going to happen, but and it's the other way. And then people say, oh, well, we're getting penalties now. We haven't got penalties before. Yeah, because we're getting in the box.
Yeah. But
yesterday, we had more touches in the box than Watford, even though we had
less possession.
Less possession.
Yeah.
So, and that's an unusual one. We won more duels yesterday. We don't normally do that. Yeah, I mean that was one of the quality. Tommy's a quality player, but I think the thing about what I said, perhaps giving Naki a start at Brum, it's just resting these players. You know, you can be the best player in the world, you still get tired.
Yeah, you quickly, Mark. Then I go back to Dave. Go on, Mark.
Yeah, come into the third goal. Tommy did play a big part. That wasn't his own. Best contribution. There was a great contribution later. So, yeah, I'm foreshadowing.
All right. Okay. Well, Dave, your thought. We needed that. We needed that second goal, didn't we? Because you go in 2-0 up. The halftime talk's a little bit different.
Yeah, I think what I needed yesterday was my stream not to go down just as that ball was played down the line to Tommy, because by the time I put it back on, BBC live text had updated and I saw goal hoot, and I thought, well, I won't repeat what I thought. I thought after all our kind of dominance in the first half, they'd scored right on half time, and then I started to get lots of WhatsApp messages come through, and it was 2-0, and then I noticed it was an own goal. I thought, oh, that's okay.
It was definitely a hoot, Dave.
I then managed to get onto Robin's TV and watch the goal back at halftime. I guess the halftime team talk is probably more of the same. You know, it's probably not a lot to say. There weren't really any things that we were doing wrong or needed a little tweak to. It was pretty much carry on as you're doing, guys. Just don't let them back into the game.
And as we say, you know, this has happened a few too many times, Mark, and I missed the goal, but I know it was set up for Zadzi, if that's the right name. Georgian, yeah. On loan from Ghent, set up by Asprea. We have been conceding goals in that opening quarter of the second period, and it was no exception, because straight away they all that good work's undone. Was that an avoidable goal as you saw it, Mark? I haven't even seen it on a replay yet, but
yeah, they shifted the ball from the left. There was a player in the middle who passed the ball across to Asprea, and he actually hits the ball with the outside of his foot past the right of Cam Pring, and Chakwetadze running onto the ball. Garner Hickman should track him better into the area when he's on the move, and he hits the ball through Max's legs from right to left, and it's in. And it was probably one of the only times that they did that. You know, they actually got a runner into the area like that. I thought, oh, here we go. They're going to be doing this now a lot. but they didn't. I think that was probably the only time they got a runner. We forced, there were a lot of crosses, but there weren't any dangerous balls like that because City were so solid. But that was the only time we were very open down that left-hand channel. Pring didn't really have any cover, and Jack Matadze has got loads of time to run onto it. Garner Hittman doesn't track him very well, and he's...
Is that how you saw, Ian? Is that how you saw the goal as well? Could have been defended better?
Just rewind a little bit, and Cam Pring gave the ball away. He got sucked into the middle of the field and he gave the ball away with a poor header. He headed it straight to one of their players who then switched it wide to the left. And at that point, or their right flank, our left flank. And then at that point, he's playing severe catch-up. So that was probably why. But you're right. I mean, Taylor Gardner-Hickman should have tracked that runner better. And the ball did go through Max's legs. And the number of times you see it go through defenders' legs and goalkeepers' legs at all levels of football is one of the things that never ceases to surprise me. But it does happen. And I thought, here we go again.
Yeah.
But we didn't. And that was one of the other things that impressed me. Our heads didn't drop. We didn't think, oh, no, we're Bristol City. This always happens to us. We didn't start feeling sorry for ourselves. We kept doing what we'd been doing right the way through. And is a time-honoured Gary Johnson expression.
Memorable.
Memorable.
Dave, yeah, was that memorable, Dave? I can't remember it. I thought of it last night.
He's not having the greatest time at Torquay at the moment. I read some suicidal post from a Torquay fan on Twitter X this morning. But
we demoralised them with our football. That's what one of his sayings. Yeah, saying. We demoralised them with our football. Yeah.
Well, saying actually, Gary Johnson.
That's very upbeat.
That was one of your... You were good at impersonating Gary Johnson, weren't you? Yeah, Ian.
No. Well, Gary... Yeah, we demoralised him with our football.
Yeah, not bad. You've got to work out how to talk like Liam Manning. Dave, that was the perfect response. Barely a minute later, and, you know, we're back to the restored two-goal lead, 3-1 up. Conway, as Mark said earlier, very much involved, to Mometi. Sykes offside? There was sort of talk of that on the commentary, no?
No, definitely not offside. I think probably most of us watching it probably expected the linesman's flag to go up because he was so close to the goal line, and you kind of often wonder in those situations, how did he get that far beyond the defender from the point that Mometi shot? But he was a couple of feet onside at the point Mometi had his shot. Once again, we won the ball back 25 yards out from goal. Sykes fed Conway. Conway shifted it onto Mometi, and Mometi did his little left foot shot across the keeper, Chris Packett hands, spilled it to Sykes, and it was in the back of the net. I think you know, there was a few people last night saying things like, "Oh, see, Mometi can go on the left hand side." Dave Rennie spent a lot of time with Anis Mometi over the summer, trying to get him to be less obvious about when he goes either way, and trying to adjust his body shape.
Dave Rennie, you say there, Dave? Yes, is that right? Which shows. He was more than just a physio, Or maybe he should have concentrated on medicine.
He's a smart bloke, you know, and he's not necessarily a football man either. He's a very skilled professional at his job, you know. There's a couple of other things that probably he told me in confidence that are, you know, amazing. Some of the things that he did in his time here. It's easy just to look at kind of injuries and things like that.
Is that psychology, as you say, about Mometi not being so obvious?
It's more kind of, I guess, you know, physical movement and things like that. I think someone said something the other night that it looks like he runs on his right hand side or something like that. I can't remember exactly what they said, and he does look a little bit like he's always going to go to his right. And therefore, if you're, you know, when you step up into the championship, defenders get to work you out pretty quickly. That's why you often get, you know, second season syndrome with lots of players. Probably Alex Scott's the one player in recent years that, you know, just can do whatever he wants, can't he? But it always looks like he's coming on his right, and he can go on his left. But it kind of then is so obvious the defender, you know, picks it up. So they did quite a bit of work with him in the summer about trying to change his kind of body position as he goes into those dribbles. So, you know, a bit of credit there for the old regime as well. You know, sometimes it takes time to work out. Maybe he didn't get a run of games under Nigel Pearson. You know, if he comes, if he's now going to be a mainstay of our team, then I'm delighted. I you know, ultimately, it's all about Bristol City doing well. Isn't it?
We paid £1 million for him, didn't we? Mark, you wanted to raise a point just there?
Yeah, I think it's also Mehmet's tactical ability. I think he, you know, I think we saw a little bit of that under Nigel Pearson, but he's doing it consistently now. He comes inside to create space for Cam Pring, and he's also his defensive work in forward positions is good as well. I mean, you don't have to make full-blooded tackles to make mistakes. I mean, we saw it yesterday with Sykes had a nibble to give Conway the ball, and he does that as well. Tackling back is great. You know, I mean, it's just, God, it's not rocket science, but we're doing that on a consistent basis. But sometimes he plays narrower, sometimes he's out wide. I mean, when we saw him against QPR in the first game, he looked marooned on the left flank, and the right back had him in his pocket because he just went at him so easily, got robbed of the ball, and then he looked like he was dragging him like a rag doll back up the pitch. Now he knows when to make his runs and what to do. He's a lot cleverer. And the thing that irritates me is, you know, Downsy says is saying he's a replacement for Semenyo. He hasn't got the upper body strength for Semenyo, so he has to use his skill. So he's a work in progress. But I got to apologise to him because I've written the guy off, and I really thought his career at City was over. I'd seen nothing from him to suggest he was going anywhere, and he's proven me wrong. But I'm clueless, so it doesn't really matter, does it?
Well, we're not as close to what's going on there, Ian. I think you did say this, at least one of you said it, that we could have turned that superiority into goals. We'll come on to the Andy Vyman goal in a minute. But making those decisions, and Liam Manning has said that we're going to be better. We won 4-1, but we can still play better than this. And I've got a couple of instances. Again, it's involving, one's involving Mehmeti. It was a wrong pass. He shot wide when Knight was in a good position to receive the ball. And then just after James had come on for Taylor Gardner-Hickman, Knight to Sykes, who shot wide, and Conway was free. So, you know, if we can get them thinking, and I think Liam's doing that, we are going to convert those opportunities into goals, aren't we, Ian?
Yeah. I mean, if you the time to worry is when you're not creating any chances.
Yeah.
That's the time to get worried. And that manifests itself in not having that many shots on target. And team seeing you as a bit of a soft touch and being being an easier game. So, definitely think that if nothing else, it's progress and it's very encouraging. Now, okay, on occasions when you play like that, and I'll say it now so that when it happens, people go, but you said it, the wheels have come off, because it does whichever way. You know, we've seen the wheels come off with Man United, Liverpool, Chelsea. So if the wheels can come off with them, they can look at Newcastle yesterday. Forest turned them over. So it's, you know, that can happen. And I'm still sticking to my mantra that once we get the injuries more resolved than they are, you're never going to be injury free. But once we get the injuries to key players resolved, I think we'll have a decent squad. I mean, I'll stick to the top 10 squad. But it's such an open division that once the players get confidence and they start moving up the table, games become different because sides are more respectful of us and they'll be more worried about what we do than what they try and do, particularly if they're not in great form. But if you know, going on history, if you're ever in bad form, we're the one team that you want to play. So Rooney must be rubbing his hands together at the fact that
I know. That's it. And that's
we're going up to St. Andrews.
And watching this club for over 55 years. You know, if a player's been out for two, this is going back early 70s when we played Borough. There was a player who played for Borough. You'll remember this name, Ian, called John Hickton. He was a big centre forward and he'd been out for bloody and he came back and he got two goals, and you know, we always seem to be the fall guys for a guy who's been out like you say. Also, you know, how many managers, and Graham Souness is in that number, you've lost to Bristol City, you lose your job the next day. Maybe that could happen to David Moyes on the Sunday week. Who knows? Anyway, well, back to the action.
It won't happen to Moyes, but Rooney, I mean, if you look at his record since he's gone into Birmingham, and bearing in mind they were fifth when he went in there, they've picked up 9 points out of 39.
Yeah, he's not doing a good job. Dave, the substitution.
But we must go up there and play like we did at Watford. We must attack. Don't sit back against them. Because that's what one thing they can do is attack.
Djukovic amongst them.
Mark Roberts.
Djukovic didn't play yesterday, but they've got... and I was glad to see... Well, not glad to see a bloke get injured, but Roberts went off injured. Looked like he'd done something to his hip. Now, he's got the long throw, and he's one of those blokes that really throws his head at it in the penalty area. And I think Roberts, you know, if he's out, bearing in mind that their defence in the first half, I mean, Milk turns quicker. So we could have a little bit of a field day if we play really well. But St Andrews, I mean, I can remember winning 4-0 up there, but blimey, Bob Taylor got hat-trick that
Nicky
day,
Moore.
I think.
Was it Bob Taylor? Nicky, I remember that. I was at that
We
game.
Won there, actually, we won there under Pearson, didn't we?
Did we?
3-0.
Yeah, 3-0.
That was
yeah.
one of his early games in charge, wasn't it? Dave, the substitutions, James for TGH, just, that's not a reflection. That was the first one, just with 23 minutes to go. And then Vyman and Wells coming on for Mometi and Conway. You know, they're all of those substitutions, they don't weaken the 11, do they? Even though we've got this so-called depleted squad.
No, I think, you know, probably said before as well, I think 9 subs is a stupid rule. I don't think you should have 9 subs. Personally, I'd have, if you're going to allow 5 players to make it on the pitch, you should only have 5 subs in total. But that's probably a bit of a beef on my part. But I think as long as you've got 5 or 6 senior players on your bench, and by seniors, I mean, you know, I include people like Sam Bell in that as well, not necessarily your Bowen, certainly not, you know, Knight LaBelle, but people who you can bring on, who you think you can make an impact. What we've had at times when we've had big injuries, and I guess Cardiff, you know, was probably the case in point. Not only did we have, you know, young Joe James making his debut, the only senior player we had on the bench was Tommy Conway, who was being eased back from injury. And when we made the subs, and when Cardiff made their subs, we were right back in the game at 1-0 down at that point for about an hour, or certainly that kind of second, or sorry, the first 15 of the second half. We were well on top of the game. And if anything, we looked the team that were going to go and maybe go and get a goal and maybe equalise, and then the game's very different. They brought on subs that strengthened them or gave them fresh legs, and they started to impose themselves. We made subs that, in effect, weakened us, and that's the problem. Whereas if you've got people like Vyman, James, who else, just looking at my notes, Cornick, Wells on your bench, it's a very different proposition. It allows you to make different changes. But it also means you're not worsening your side by making subs, and that's the big difference for me. I'm trying to think who was the game the other week where we played, where I think pretty much the subs we had, although they were, you know, good, but we wanted to control the game, and actually most of our subs were people like Vyman and Bell, who are probably not the players who are going to give you controlled possession. Whereas yesterday,
probably the Blackburn game.
Yeah, might well have been.
We took off Knight and Sykes. That you know, that was a substitution that went the other way.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, no, I think, you know, sensible subs. I'd probably like to have seen a couple of players get a few more minutes, and I think they would have done if we'd have got that fourth goal, but we left it until, you know, 83rd minute.
Yeah, and since we're on that fourth goal, Mark, I mean, one of the subs was involved in the initial play, Wells, but you talked earlier about the ball by Williams. There was Andy Vyman, you know, and somebody said on the OTIP, oh, that ruined Dave's Christmas. Andy Vyman scored. He's probably in tears now. It was a good finish, and it was good build-up as well, wasn't it, Mark?
Yeah, Naki Wells near the halfway line, plays the ball back sorry, to Joe Williams, hits the pitch across the ball with his right foot, and chips it over and behind their defence, and they're just all over the place. Three players. Vyman's just bearing down on goal. Hamer comes out and he just puts it in the top right side of the goal. Very good finish. First goal since Rotherham last April. 50th goal of his City career. Another player I've written off. I didn't think he was doing anything either. No. Mr. Clueless here. But what a cracking finish.
51st goal, Mark. 50th league goal.
50th, yes, sorry. Then 50, I did say 50th league goal, didn't I?
No.
Didn't I? So my mind and my brain are working against each other again.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, a renaissance for Andy Vyman then, you know. I mean, my favourite player.
Good old He's a hell of a one-on-one All finisher. Hail. There's not many times he goes through one-on-one and doesn't score.
That's right.
Typically,
true.
He lifts the ball as well.
He did. He
hits it around the keeper's shoulders. And you can't get your hands up quick enough. Obviously, you can't get your legs there.
No,
he's pretty composed in those positions.
Finish,
not always composed
out. So, elsewhere. You know, on the strength of that finish, do we give him another contract in the summer?
Yeah.
Well, you've got to wait until the summer because they could all be injured by then for a start. And it depends. Well, like I said in a previous podcast, it depends who else you can get. It's all right saying, well, this player's got to go and that player's got to go. We want to get rid of him. Yeah, but who's coming in? Are they actually better? But with, you know, I think Manning will be, I think the profile of the player will change, but will be absolutely outlined down to the last, you know, down to what size feet he's got. Seems to be the way that he works. He's like Guardiola. He's an obsessive, you know. And you think you've had a great game, and he comes on. He says, "Ah, yeah, well, you could have done that better." And done. You see him do it. Klopp does it, because they're just absolutely obsessive. And he strikes me as being similar. I'm not saying he's as good as them. I'm just saying a similar mentality, personality. Call it what you will.
He's heading that way. Dave Tomo said on here, and apologies, a lot of people have been texting, and I've only just pressed the button. I think I can actually make it overlay as well, but we'll save that for another day. Tomo said, we've been eulogising about his performance. If he plays another half a dozen games like that without injury, you see us giving Williams a contract in the summer, or do you think Liam's got his own targets in mind, and I'll say a name off repeated on here? Branigan at Oxford. I mean, is Branigan, what you know, Branigan and Joe Williams, are they same sort of players, or are we not comparing apples with apples in that respect?
No, they're quite a bit stylistically different. Williams, as we know, is...
They can give you everything. Sorry, that was a song title there. You said stylistically different. Yeah,
that's before my time. Before my time. I've heard of them. I think,
you,
I think
David,
they used to play
do you
on 78, didn't they, Dave? I think.
Sorry, carry on, Dave.
Yeah, so no, they are stylistically quite different. Williams is I guess pre-injuries, Williams was your typical box to box, but more your kind of following up play rather than getting past the ball. Whereas Branigan's what I'd call more a kind of progressive player. He'll move up the pitch with the ball. He'll get on the ball. Williams isn't so keen to necessarily get on the ball as much. I'm pretty sure they're both the same age. And therefore, the amount of money you'd have to pay to probably get Cameron Branigan, I wouldn't bother.
Okay, it's probably, fair enough.
I think Branigan's 27, Dave, I think.
Yeah, I think Williams is 27, maybe 28 now. They're a similar age. And would you want to go and spend a fee on that for a player at that age? I think there'll be other players that were interested. I think if you were going to get someone from Oxford, you'd be better off going and get McGuane, if that's how you pronounce his name.
Okay, we've not got long to wait until the window opens, and it's whether we do our business early. Mark, Bobby Lost and Founder said he'd like them being the coaches, with young Yeboah. He could be a Semenyo off the bench with the right tutoring. He's rapid, and he has got that upper body strength, and, you know, you almost want to rein him in a little bit because everything seems to be a bit erratic. But do you think when all the players come back from injury, you know, Yeboah will still have a place on that bench?
I think he needs to go out on loan and get regular football in League Two, probably. I think that might help him. I I think he's there, he's on the bench at the moment because of the lack of numbers, but he's very raw. We expect a lot from him. You know, it's just he's just not able to control that aggression. Takes too many touches in the area. I mean, there's a couple of occasions where he could have taken shots off. But I think we it helped players like Semenyo when he went to Newport, you know, beating Middlesbrough in the cup, building his career. So yeah, if he can get regular football in the league, I think that would be the best course for him.
Okay.
When the players are back and fit.
Ian Bennis said on the text feed, interesting night was captain and not Viner. I mean, what a player Jason Knight is, you know, and he's playing very advanced, you know, and he's got that enthusiasm and he's a good footballer as well. But, you know, captain for next season maybe, or why not Viner? Why wasn't Viner the next to wear the band?
Well, Knighty is more likely to dig people out if they're not doing it. I'm told he'll even do it in training. He's very confident young man. Once again, anybody thinking he's a finished article is deluded. He's not, but he's a good player. But he can improve. He can get 20-30% better. And that will manifest itself in more goals and more assists. But really like him as a player. And he's one of those guys you often hear managers say, well, we haven't got any leaders. I mean, Lee Johnson and Mark Ashton signed 72 players and decided we haven't got any leaders.
Mm.
I think he's one of the leaders down there. People like Naismith or others, but Naismith has had major problems with injuries since he's been here, and he's out injured now. McCrory apparently is a very similar character and a bit of a beast. And I think Joe Williams as well. I mean, you know, he's not going to let anybody kick sand in his face either.
No.
And he's when he's fit, Joe, he's a decent footballer as well. He's not one of these blokes who just kicks
people. We are all looking forward to seeing Ross McCrory, which hopefully could be in January. And is that what we're led to believe on injuries?
Mid-January, training with the... Well, he's been training for out on the grass, what they call out on the grass, for a few weeks. But training properly, I'm thinking he's going to be available second, third week in Jan. And a bit of news on Eamon, hopes to be back on the grass in 3 weeks.
Skin off fingers crossed for Eamon, because it would be 2 years since he played his last competitive game. It was February 20.
Yeah, I mean, that's another one. If everyone's fit, it probably wouldn't do Eamon any harm to go out on loan and get some regular football.
We've done the game, finished 4-1, which is absolutely brilliant, coming on the back of the win against Hull. Ian, you asked at the senior Reds, you asked our chairman when the accounts are coming out. He didn't know less than 48 hours later. They come out. I'll start with you, Dave, on this, because in terms of, I'm going to place myself bottom of the four of us in terms of, well, no, maybe Mark and I are equal bottom, but I think...
Weren't you an accountant in your early days?
I am, but I was discussing, I've been doing recruitment 30 years.
David was press ganged into being a football summarizer at GW Radio West.
We had this little debate, Dave and I, on Twitter the other day, when people are saying about the scheduling of fees. If a player leaves for $9.5 million, they could be paying for the next, they could be paying $2.5 million, $3 million, I can't add up, $3.175 million for the next 3 years is the $9.5 million that goes into the accounts. And that's what I want to talk about next, is the accounts, because they did come out this week. It showed, I think, a $22 million loss that I felt it would be about that number, but that was after including the sale of Antoine Semenyo at $9.5 million, and that would have included, correct me if I'm wrong here, Dave, acquiring whatever costs were associated with acquiring Cornick and Mometi. But whichever way you look at it, $22 million loss without player sales, $30 million. Yeah, Mr. Lansdowne wrote out a check, he converted debt into equity for $22.5 million. But the numbers, you've had trouble getting your head around them, Dave, because there's so much in there. But on what you've read so far, and you haven't done your usual in-depth forensic analysis, what is there to give you cause for concern that you would like further investigation and more transparency from the club? Dave, take the floor.
I think before I do that, Tim's just put in, Dave hates the Lansdowne. This should be interesting. I don't hate the Lansdowne at all. You need to read what I actually write, Tim. I'm critical of some of the way they run their business. Like, I guess my starting gambit in answering Dave's question is, how much should we critique an ownership group that allows a 30, 35 million revenue business to have costs of 65 million? That's my first point, because that's not sustainable. And the only way you make that better is by selling players. And I think, I'm not saying I have the answers, but I think there are better ways of doing that and running that operation to not have to have such big losses to then have to sell players to support the amount you have to stick in as an owner. That's my criticism of Steve Lansdowne. And I don't think that's saying I hate them. I don't hate them at all. I don't hate John Lansdowne. You know, seen him at the basketball and things like that. You know, fine bloke. Don't hate anyone. You know, I don't think, you know, that's wrong to say that. But I'll be critical of them, just like I'll be critical of players, like I'll be critical of managers, and I'll praise them on things as well. So I'll praise Steve Lansdowne here and say he's never not paid those bills. So in some ways, if he wants to pay 65 million for his operation and support it, then he can do. I don't think it's the right way of doing it. And we've seen with other clubs like Luton and Brentford, there's a different way to do this. And actually the best way of, my view of the best way of doing it is you do that through strong recruitment and strong academy. And I think the academy bit we're getting right. So, you know, if you want to put that down as Steve Lansdowne, you can have a tick in the box, and that's another reason for not hating it. But I think if you look at recruitment over the years, it's not been good enough. And we go back to the Mark Ashton days, and, you know, Mark said, oh, we're world leading. You'll be surprised at the number of clubs who've come to look at our recruitment operation. Well, if they didn't look at it, they'd probably have a look at it and say, that's probably not how we want to do it, guys. What I would say, and this goes back to probably another point you made earlier on, Tim, was the reason I think recruitment has improved in the last 2.5 years is because Nigel Pearson and Richard Gould between them set a strategy of how we're going to recruit, what types of players we recruit. Ian talked earlier on about, you know, shoe size. I know he kind of meant that facetiously, but one of the key things that they recruit to is players that can run and run and run. And Liam Manning said that in his first interview, successful sides can run and run and run. Man City probably do, you know, and Liverpool and teams like that, they probably do as much running, and purposeful running is probably the right thing to say, than any other side. You know, I go back to the Liverpool team in like the 70s and early 80s. Everyone used to say how hard they used to work when they had the ball and when they didn't have the ball. And I think those fundamentals are there, and Liam Manning wants that. So the first thing we'll look at is, you know, because actually we want to get to the Premier League. And that's one of the fundamental things you need in the Premier League to be able to run and run and run, especially when you're playing teams that actually aren't going to let you have the ball very much either.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, you know, I've probably digressed a little bit away from the finances. So Steve Lansdowne can do what he wants. He owns the club. He's told us that. But I think he could be a lot more efficient with how we recruit. And I think we've seen some progress in that area. So fair play to them. And I think, you know, I know Brian Tinian's got a load of stick, you know, on the forums and social media. I've got no beef with Brian Tinian at all. I don't have that baggage around when he was manager, because I wasn't really watching City much in those days anyway. It's a bit like when Lee Johnson was a player and people have got the baggage around that. I don't have that with him as well, because I didn't see him play. So I'll judge Brian Tinian on what he's done. He's done a good job with the academy for his role that he plays there. And he's been part of the recruitment setup for the last at least kind of like 12, 18 months. So I think we let those guys get on with it. And hopefully we won't waste as much money. And we'll also have, you know, more saleable assets as well. Yeah. So Sorry, okay. I deviated away from your question a bit, Dave. But
not at all. I'll come on to Ian and Mark. I'll let you have a say as well, because I think Ian and Dave have probably got more substance on this than us. But Dave's used the term waste. I've said Steve Lansdowne has been a fool with his money, because somebody's into 300 million if you include the infrastructure costs as well. But, you know, losses are more than half of that 300 million that he's put into the club. What's your takeaway based on an initial review of those accounts for 22-23?
The thing that stands out for me, where there's been a major increase, I'm actually trying to find the page on the accounts. Excuse me if you can see the top of my head a little bit, but our staff numbers, the two areas where they've reduced are players. So it's reduced from 90 down to 76, and football support, which is reduced from about 140 odd down to 120 odd. But the number of people that we've got involved in food and beverage,
Dave's is, holding the numbers up, but Dave, they're back to front money.
Oh, nuts.
Get a mirror.
I thought you'd written those in Russian, Dave.
Food and beverage is doubled. The number of staff in food and beverage. Now, the only thing I can think, and we are, as I said in the last podcast, we are going to be doing an interview with Gavin Marshall, Dave and I, and with questions that we're also inviting people. You can send them to me on Twitter if you want a particular question asked. And we'll also be doing one, I'm pleased to say, with Brian Tinian, which will probably be after the transfer window, because I bet he's a bit of a busy boy at the moment. But that surprised me. Now, the only thing I can think that is that we've taken over employing people directly that were previously employed through an agency.
Yeah.
Because our wage bill is 36 million, or wage costs are 30, wages, 36 million. Now, that isn't footballers. So I got in touch with Kieran Maguire, Price of Football, who does this thing for a living. And I said to him, when you've got a set of accounts like this, how do you calculate what the player's wages are? And he said, I use the same formula for every football club, and it's based on a percentage. So I thought, well, that doesn't sound hugely accurate to me. But I do notice on a spreadsheet that there's weekly wage is one, and the weekly wage, which I guess is wages paid weekly, is 15.4 million a year. Now, if you divide that by the number of players, it comes out about $5,000 each. Now, I'm not suggesting the first team players are earning that. We probably got kids down there earning buttons that are on women that are included in those 70 players. So I think that'd be a very interesting question, because this point about you can't see, there was always a claim that, oh, well, Nigel Pearson's reduced the wage bill because he's let a lot of players go and he's had to do that and he's had to play kids. Yeah. But so when I see the average weekly wage quoted, I'm a little bit sceptical.
Yeah. All right, Dave's got a question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just on that, Ian, I think there's a couple of things. So obviously, the numbers of staff have gone up because of concerts. Okay, that's the main reason for that big.
So Dave, sorry to interrupt, but those concerts, therefore the commercial revenue in these accounts. That's what I thought.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
So in the way that the club does get it, it's not like it goes into some Bristol Sport ethereal pot somewhere and just disappears.
No. So it's quite simple. I think there was another thing on the poster. So we've got Bristol City Holdings is a non-trading entity. There are three main elements to it. Bristol City, the men's. Under the Bristol City men's is Bristol City women's, which is, in the grand scheme of things, quite negligible in terms of the amount of money, you know, in the context of the rest of it. And then you've got Ashton Gate Limited. Ashton Gate has got, and I'm probably going to say, I'll probably get this slightly technically wrong, but, you know, I guess people can pick me up on it. But they've got three main sources of income, Ashton Gate Limited. They've got all of the gigs, concerts, and anything else that they run there, Christmas parties, you know, events that they hold, you know, for corporates going in there, etc. That's one, and that's, I guess, a fairly big slug of their of that revenue sum you'll see in there. The other two areas of income they get are rent from Bristol City Football Club for use of the stadium, and rent from Bristol Bears for use of the stadium. So those are their three main income lines.
Do you know what those numbers are, Dave, for the rent? Because I've often said about one way for the Lansdownes to get themselves out of the football is to hive off the football club separately, and then Ashton Gate charge the football operation a rent based on what division we're in. And if we knew what that number was, that gives some indication of what they perceive the market rate to be, does it not?
So I think just going on from that again, I think if you look at, and I'll probably answer this in a couple of parts, revenue's gone up by, what's it gone up, 5 million or something like that?
Yeah.
Costs have gone up 5 million as well. Or maybe it's like 6 million and 6 million. I can't remember the figures off the
it's top. It's about five and a half, Dave, but yeah.
Yeah, so effectively, I kind of see that as every pound we earn, we also spend a pound, which, you know, is probably not quite what we really want to do from you know, Bristol City Holdings' point of view. We'd like to, as the more and more concerts and gigs and corporate stuff we do, you'd hopefully there'd be, you know, more profit generated out of that. And until we see the individual accounts of both Bristol City Football Club and Ashton Gate Limited, it's very difficult to look at the apportionment. But, you know, wages have gone up because, you know, this is, I don't have a spreadsheet for this, as someone on the forum was horrified that I think we had three gigs in the financial year last year, and we only had one the year before. And therefore, you know, we will have needed more staff to cover that. So I suspect a lot of that food and beverages picked up because we did three times as many gigs as what we did. I think it'd be interesting to see the income and the costs again, the individual account. And the other really, really important point to make here is that a lot of those costs are because we did a 13-month accounting period.
Yeah.
So you've got 13 months worth of costs in there. But what happens in the summer from a football point of view? We don't make any money. So revenues don't really go up. But costs do. And the other subplot to that, and this is someone else is giving me the information, so it's not stuff I particularly had picked up myself, is that because we went from the 1st of June accounting period of 1 year to the 30th of June accounting period of the other, that includes, in last year's figures, 2 years worth of end of year contract bonuses. So normally you only have 1 year because there'd only be 1 year covered it. So when we look at
the wages, that's why the wages are higher than one might expect, because you've got those loyalty bonuses in doubled up.
Yeah, and what we'll see when we see the Bristol City Football Club accounts is hopefully it'll come out of that saying that actually, if you kind of do a simplistic, you know, times it by 12 and divide it by 13 to bring it back to a normal period, you then see a kind of more baseline wage. But you'd still then have to look at it and say, how big are those kind of end of contract bonuses or end of year bonuses? And I think the other thing that's in the accounts, or I'm going to do a bit of an accountancy lesson today, even though I'm not an accountant, is because of, once again, that extension of the year, the signings of Ross McCrory and Rob Dickey went into a set of accounts that have just been published because they were signed ahead of. Yeah, you'll actually see in the accounts there's 4.4 million worth of acquisitions.
Now, so there's no. They were signed before the 1st of July, those two players. Yeah. Interesting. I didn't. That's a very. Yeah.
Whereas Jason Knight will be in next year's accounts.
Yeah. And so, Alex Scott Sale will be in next year's accounts, all 25 million of it. Unless, of course, this is the conversation we were having, Dave. Alex Scott, we got to quote Steve Lanza, we got our 25 million. But if the base fee on Alex Scott was, call it 18 million, which quite nicely equates to the 20 million euros that was banded around at the time, and the 7 million in add-ons, 23, 24 accounts would have the 18 million, and then the other seven would only come in the financial years where it was triggered or he was sold, and they crystallised then. All right, that's a very interesting point.
There's a nice little page in the account, Dave, right near the end. I think it's something like point 26 or something like that, which says, since the end of the, since these accounts are prepared, here are some of the things that we've done. It doesn't say that, it alludes to that. And it says we had a net ins and outs on transfers of 18.99 million. And I believe that that probably means we sold Alex Scott for 20 million pounds up front. We've got a little bit of money incoming from Hannoah Masengo's post-contract end transfer to Burnley, because they'd have had to have paid us compensation or agreed a fee, minus the amount that we've paid for Jason Knight. And it, I think that, to me, says Alex Scott is around the 20 million mark, not the 25 million as an upfront fee.
And I didn't think... Right, Mark, go on, you sat there very patiently listening through. Really, really interesting.
Sorry, Mark.
I'm clueless with all these finances. The only thing I would ask, some modern fans might be asking, is financial fair play still based on 3 years of cumulative debt with a ceiling? Where are we with that, and what are the rules at the moment?
Dave, let Dave go.
First of all, it's not... The important thing to remember, Mark, is not debt, it's profit and loss. Okay, so our net debt, and I think from reading these prices, most of that is to Steve Lansdowne, has gone up to about 97 million. So one interesting is, so keep that in mind. Now, one of the questions I want to ask Gavin Marshall, the last time I asked Gavin and the last time I asked Steve Lansdowne, they both said, well, to be totally honest with you, the EFL haven't really made up their mind yet. So we know it's as it was, the 39 million, but what they haven't said is what they're going to do about COVID. Now, some of the other clubs have put their accounts out. We're in a similar position. Stoke was one, and I think Middlesbrough was another. And they included things, as far as I know, like lost transfer revenue that people were banging on about. So there is an allowance now. Whether they say, well, look, what we're going to do, we're going to extend that period by another, I don't know, 2 years, 1 year, ipso facto, you get another 13 or 26 million quid worth of allowances. But Gavin Marshall's absolutely convinced that financial fair play isn't going to be a major problem. Obviously, having sold Alex Scott, that gives us that, if you want to call it a get out of jail free card. In terms of costs, I mean, one good thing, well, there are a few good things, but one good thing is we're now wages, and this may sound ridiculous, and in a way it is, wages are 98% of income. Now, when people say, well, hang on a minute, that we've still got to be losing a lot of money. We are. But 2 years ago...
They were 120-something percent, weren't they?
212%. And that is financial year 21. It was 212% of income. But you can go back as far
as... COVID-related, wasn't it? So.
Yeah, but you go back to 2013 and 2014, and it was 171% and 185% then.
Yeah.
So this is one of the criticisms that Dave and I have had for ages, that percentage is just ridiculous. Now, NHS is one of the biggest employers in the country, and they've got hundreds of thousands of people, right? NHS was an economy, it'd be the 20th biggest in the world. their ratio of, if you will, cost to staff is 42%. But a lot of football clubs are in this same boat. So it's a weird old industry, and quite how some of the clubs get away with it, I'm really not sure. But right. that is one good thing. But I would like to find out what this weekly wage is and how it's calculated.
I'll just make one point on wages. This is where it's a little bit confusing, and I haven't looked at the accounts at all, the printout or whatever. But when all these catering staff coming on, you know, you can bring on 400 catering staff, but they're not full-time equivalents, right? But if you take those numbers, they're probably just a little bit above minimum wage, and they dilute. You almost want to break out the football wage costs, as in players, from all the infrastructure costs, yeah? And what is the cost of the infrastructure of keeping the club going? And that's where the comparison with your Millwalls and your Brentfords and your stuff like that. What is the actual physical cost of running the entity, and where is the wastage? Yeah, because well, you bring the all these physical staff on, they're not full time. Yeah, so you could bring on 30 staff, and if they're only doing 10 hours a week on Saturday, you know, it's nothing. Right, Dave, then you, Ian. Dave, what were you going to say?
Yeah, just going back to Mark's question. So yeah, we're in no danger of FFP because we sold Alex Scott, so we can, you know, unless we suddenly went out and spent 25 million in a January window, so which we're not going to do, so we can not worry about that. COVID rules are all done and dusted. There are no more COVID allowances out there. Ian, your point about people like Stoke and Middlesbrough and Nottingham Forest were another that put COVID transfer losses and various other transfer expenses in their accounts, and we didn't. I think that's just, I guess, them trying to perhaps be a little bit, I was going to say the word open. That's not, I guess if they put it in their accounts, they're almost saying, well, it must have happened, and therefore the EFL must accept it. Bristol City chose not to do that. But as part of the submission into the EFL, as part of their profitability and sustainability, you, even if you put stuff in like Forest and Middlesbrough and did, you still have to qualify it, where City would have put an appendix into their accounts and said, and here are all the COVID allowances that we're putting in for our account. So even though we made X million loss, we only want to put in, you know, 10 million for FFP as opposed to 20 million for this year. So that's the way it works on that. Future, there is going to be a change. We think it's going to come in next season. And that's that we're going to move much more closely to League One and League Two, which is called Salary Cost Management Protocol, SCMP, which is what FIFA or UEFA, I can't remember which body it is, are starting to dictate, which is much, at the end of the day, it's not hugely different. It's still looking at cost versus income and having a ratio, but there'll be, once again, limits on losses, but you'll also have to make sure that your wages are within a set percentage of your turnover. That'll initially probably start at about 90%, and over 3 years it'll roll down to about 70%. Sorry, I've just got someone at my door about to deliver a parcel. So that'll change. I'll let Ian answer while I go and do that.
Go on, Ian.
The important thing to remember is when we send the accounts off to the EFL, there'll be a different set of accounts. Because they won't include the women, they won't include Ashton Gate, and they won't include the academy. So, because all those things, we could go out, Steve Lansdowne could go out and spend another 100 million on the stadium, and it would have no influence whatsoever on profit and sustainability and financial fair play. However, it could increase the debt, which is what you've got to understand between the balance sheet and the profit and loss account. So, Steve's now put in £267 million to the club. And as we've said on previous podcasts, from a footballing perspective, he ain't got much to show for it.
So far.
But, yeah, let's... But looking on the bright side, let's say we move forward and we start doing really well, and he will have something to show for it. But no, I think these accounts, I didn't think we would lose. I thought we'd lose, but I didn't think we'd lose that much. But you've then got to deconstruct it all and think, well, okay, what have we put in this year that we won't lose next year? What's it going to look like next year? We know the market we're shopping in on transfers, because that hasn't changed since the summer. So it's going to be League One, League Two, preferably League One. And it's going to be out of contract players that are in the Championship.
Yeah.
And I think a couple of signings in this January window will be of the same ilk. So, you know, I think I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to see what we do. Hopefully we can do our business early and get the players integrated, and then get start getting those injured players back, and then we can actually see what they're like, and we can see if we got a top 10 squad, a top 6 squad, or whatever. Well, I suppose if you finish in the top 6, you've got
players coming back.
If you finish in the top 6, you've got a top 6 squad.
Yeah, and look, it's not beyond the realms of possibility with Birmingham and Millwall coming up that we could just get into that 6th slot going into 2024 at 5 o'clock on 2024. We could January the 1st, you know, there's two. I mean, we could easily lose the next two, but you look at Birmingham away on their current form and Millwall at home on New Year's Day, bit of a hoodoo side for us, but you know, we could be in a very nice position in the build up to the game against West Ham, and then closely followed by Preston away, and they're in a bit of disarray at the moment after their start. Their manager getting the wrath of their fans with some of his comments.
Beat Leeds yesterday.
Yeah, they still beat Leeds, didn't they? 2-1.
They did.
No, yeah, he got sent off.
When was the last time that happened, that the return fixture was played barely a month after the initial fixture?
They used to play, I think we were in the second division, you know, around the time of the promotion season. You could play the same team within a few days of each other. And then going back to Christmas Day and Boxing Day in the 40s and 50s and beforehand, you played back-to-back fixtures on Christmas Day and Boxing Day.
They did.
God knows how they did. How they managed that. And the teams, of course, would go up on the train, and then you knew immediately you'd been on the wine the previous day.
There were some right funny results back in the day, weren't there? All right, look, that's really good. I think we're done for today. We're looking forward to Birmingham City. We'll be doing our review of that game on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, the YouTube version up on podcast later on. But it's this sort of funny time between Christmas and New Year, isn't it? I mean, it felt like a bloody Saturday yesterday, and today feels like a Sunday, but it's actually bloody Wednesday. I'm going to get back to learning how to play my clarinet, yeah? So I may even do the intro music on that, or I'll bring it along. When I feel I won't make a tit of myself, I will bring it along on the broadcast.
No, that's really good. Good for you.
My ambition by this time next year is to be able to play Stranger on the Shore by local musician Acker Bill.
Sorry, Acker.
There's a good Penswood name there, isn't it? Or a good Bristol.
That's something to really look forward to.
Great to see we actually hit 3 figures in terms of viewers on the YouTube channel. Thanks for that, Dave. Great to have you on, as always, with your comments on the finance, but also on the game as well. Any final words from each of you, you know, wishes for the new year and what have you? I have to say one other thing as well, that the cult of Nige, which we, what is the
you
cult?
You did say cult, Nige? Yeah, cult.
The cult, right, people, they're actually criticising Liam Manning for his use of the word behaviours. There's a whole thread on there about his phraseology.
They're not criticising it. Got taken out of context.
All right, sorry, Dave. Yeah, I know. I did.
Yeah. David, of the Brotherhood of Manning hit back at the cult of Nige. Yeah, because obviously rival factions.
Well, I'm going to lay claim, if we do carry on in this form, to the first use of the phrase Manning's Marvels. But there we go, Dave. What? Any parting shots from you, just to wrap up today?
I guess, you know, Happy New Year to anyone. But just anyone who's been typing in things. Anyone got one of those inflatable air pumps I can borrow, please?
Yeah, for your inflatable Nigel. But there we go. And Mark, anything from you? Are you working this week or are you?
No, I'm trying to get. I mean, my Christmas has been spoiled a bit by a really heavy cold. So if I'm frowning a lot, it's because my eyes are so sore.
Right. You're not going to increase your Imelda Marcos shoe collection that we can see.
I think you should go away and work on your Leonard Rossiter and say, and well, how do you think you're going against Birmingham? Liam Manning. Pressing, all right, really good.
Ian, any final shot from you? It's too early to say. It's too early to say Happy New Year because we're on a game before the New Year. Ian.
Well, I hope everybody has had a great Christmas, and I hope everybody does have a fantastic New Year, including all the players, the team, and the fans. And let's get to the end of the season, and let's get in those playoffs, guys.
Yeah. Well, I'll do the usual and get.
I'll start doing backflips. I'll start doing backflips when we get to 50 points, doing my usual things. I know Dave likes that. For me, it was great to. We've now won three on the trot. Let's not do the usual Bristol City thing and disappoint. Let's go on and really start smashing teams.
Well, let's keep up. Sound like Downsy yesterday, then, Ian.
And with the players coming back.
Sorry?
You sound like Downsy yesterday. At half time, he said all the things that no self-respecting football fan would ever say. Talks about like, oh, 2-0 up, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it was like, Downsy, you've not got a clue, mate. You don't say those things.
He didn't mention did he?
Did he say something like 2-0 being a dangerous score or anything like that?
Oh, it's
Mr. Cliche.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
I'll tell you what I did notice. You might have noticed Chris Honor was very husky yesterday.
Chris Honor was very...
Because Downsy was referring to either being ill or having a hangover, he actually said, didn't he?
There we go. Anyway, guys, listeners, everybody, enjoy the rest of the Christmas break. We look forward to trying to entertain you and talking about when we record post Birmingham City on Saturday morning. But thanks, everybody, for listening, and see you all again soon. All the best. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Really, bye-bye. I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he stops throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin's out, bobbing along. Red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bobbing along.